ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. On Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, Text Number 25. Tadvishvarupam bhajatasuvipram. Tapasvinam tvastamatatmavantam. Sabhajitoritansavidhasyatevo. Yadhishamisyadvamutasya karma. O demigods, I instruct you to approach Vishvarupa, the son of Tvasta, and accept him as your guru. He is a pure and very powerful brahmana, undergoing austerities and penances. Please, by your worship, he will fulfill your desires, provided that you tolerate his being inclined to side with the demons. This is a one-sentence purport. Lord Brahma advised the demigods to accept the son of Tvasta as their spiritual master, although he was always inclined toward the benefit of the asuras. So we'll read a couple more verses. Text 26. Sri Suka uvacha tam ekasam upavajja padishvrajyedam abruvan. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus advised by Lord Brahma and relieved of their anxiety, all the demigods went to the sage Vishvarup, the son of Tvashta. My dear king, they embraced him as spoken follows. Sri Deva uchu vayam te titita prapya ashraman bhajamastute kama sampradyatam tata pichinam sama uchitaha. That demigod said, beloved Vishvarup, may there be all good fortune to you. We, the demigods, have come to your ashram as your guests. Please try to fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on the level of your parents. Putranam hi paro dharmo, pichas shushushanam O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. What to speak of a son who is a brahmachari? Text 29 and 30. Acharyo brahmano murti, pita murti prajapate, brata madut pater murtir, mata sakshat chitistanu, dayaya bhagani murtir, dharmas yat matita swayam agnir abhagyato murtir, sarvabhutani chatmana. The Acharya, the spiritual master, who teaches all Vedic knowledge and gives initiation by offering the sacred thread, is the personification of all the Vedas. Similarly, a father personifies Lord Brahma, a brother, King Indra, a mother, the planet Earth, and a sister, Mercy. A guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest personifies the demigod Agni. And all the living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to the moral instructions of Chanakya Pandit, Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu, one should observe all living entities to be on the same level as oneself. This means that no one should be neglected as inferior, because Paramatma is seated in everyone's body. Everyone should be respected as a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse describes the different ways in which one should respect a guru, a father, a brother, a sister, a guest, and so on. Om Agyana Timita. So I'm very honored to be here. I feel something like a crow in the assembly of swan-like personalities here. But somehow the merciful devotees here have tolerated me and indulged me. by asking me to speak very kindly. So I offer my most respectful obeisances to Radhanath Maharaj and all my other Shiksha Gurus assembled and all the Vaishnavas. I'm not a very complicated speaker, expert speaker like all the Vaishnavas here. I'll try and say something in my own simple way. This verse is speaking about how all living entities represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or how we should see the Supreme Personality of Godhead within all living entities. It is not that there is only one person or one substance. In the ultimate reality, there is many personalities. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. So there is one personality who is maintaining all the others. But still, we should see, the devotee sees all living entities in relationship to Krishna, and he sees all living entities as a manifestation of Krishna. Jivera sarupoi, Krishnera nityadas. The living entity is eternal servant of Krishna. Krishnera tatasta shakti beda beda prakash. The living entity not only is the eternal servant, but he is the energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity is actually the energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord has many energies, and he is non-different. Beda beda prakash. He is simultaneously one and different from the Lord. He is a beda beda manifestation of the Supreme Lord. So the pure devotee, he sees all living entities not only equally. Of course, this is a very, very common theme which is mentioned throughout all the Vedic scriptures. We find this in Bhagavad Gita. There's a very beautiful sequence of verses in the sixth chapter where Krishna is explaining that someone who is very advanced in spiritual knowledge, he sees pebbles, stones, or even gold equally because he is detached. He can see them equally because he's not interested in anything of this world. If we have any material desire that we want to be fulfilled, then we will see gold differently than pebbles or stones in the street, because gold has some value for us. We can fulfill some desire. But he is completely detached. He's self-satisfied. He sees all equally. Then Krishna explains that someone who's even more advanced sees all people, whether they're a friend, whether an enemy, a well-wisher. He sees them all equally. So this is a very important quality of a transcendentalist. This is mentioned throughout Bhagavatam as being very much the hallmark quality of the sadhus. Krishna describes to Durvasa Muni a very, very beautiful sequence of verses glorifying his devotees, the sadhus. And he mentions two qualities that the sadhus have. Mayi nirbuddha hridaya sadhava samadarshina. The sadhus, they're within the core of their heart very firmly attached to me. They're very firmly bound to me. And sadhava samadarshina, they see all living entities equally. So they see all living entities as eternal spirit souls, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And not only do they see, it is not simply a matter of seeing, because in Vedic conception of reality, knowledge is not different from action. If you have knowledge of something, that means you can act on it. If you don't have knowledge of it, even if you can speak it, you're in ignorance of it. Krishna understood that Arjuna was in ignorance because he was lamenting. Sochanan vasochastam pragyavadam shabhasase gatasun nagatasansha na anu sochanti panita. You're speaking very learned words, and it may seem like you're knowledgeable, but Krishna is telling Arjuna, I can understand that actually you're in ignorance. Why? Because you are lamenting. Someone who is in knowledge, he never laments. He never hankers for anything. He never laments for anything. So we can understand how much knowledge a person has by their activities, not simply by what they speak. So someone who is in knowledge of the Supreme Lord within the heart of all living entities, he is perfectly situated in worshiping all living entities and worshiping the Supreme Lord as a Paramatma in the heart of all living entities. So this is what we're going to speak about today, how we can worship the Supreme Lord within the heart of all living entities. And we're going to speak a little bit about what is the obstacle to doing that and how we can try and overcome that. So there's a very beautiful sequence of verses from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Kapiladeva is very systematically explaining spiritual knowledge to his mother, Devahuti. So he explains the system of Sankhya in a devotional context. He explains yoga. He basically, there's a whole chapter which is the Yoga Sutras retold in a devotional context. And then he explains the process of bhakti yoga. Devahuti asked to hear directly about bhakti yoga. And he explains this process. And ultimately, he explains a lot about deity worship, chanting the holy names, various aspects of devotional service that we're all practicing. But then he goes on to explain how our devotional service is spoiled if we're not properly worshiping the super soul in the heart of all living entities. So I'll just read some of these verses. There's about 5-6 verses here we'll read. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temple, but does not know that the Supreme Lord, as a Paramatma, is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. So we have a few times mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam and in the literatures of the six Goswamis subsequently that the topmost devotee, he worships the Lord everywhere, and the neophyte devotee only sees the Lord in his temple and not in the heart of all living entities. So here Lord Kapiladeva gives a beautiful analogy that just as if you're performing a yajna, you're trying to offer this ghee and grains to Vishnu, the fire is the mouth of Vishnu, but if there's no fire there, you're just pouring into it ashes. It's complete waste. Ghee is something very valuable. If you're not offering it to the Supreme Lord, you're just offering it into ashes. What is the value? So in the same way, if we're worshiping the deity or performing other aspects, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj very wonderfully explained about the 5 aspects of bhakti which are most potent and how actually all of them, with various stories and references from the scriptures, if we're not respecting other living entities, whether it's reading Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, chanting the holy name, residing in Vrindavan, or associating with devotees, all these things, not only is it have no value, but there can be a very serious negative consequence. One who offers me respect, but is envious of the bodies of others, and is therefore a separatist, never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior toward other living entities. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, a separatist means seeing something separate from Krishna or having a separate interest from Krishna. So my dear mother, even if he worships me with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. Performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his own heart and the hearts of other living entities as well. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whomever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. And then he explains in the next verse in such a very beautiful, simple way how we can worship the Supreme Lord situated in the heart of all living entities. Therefore, through charitable gifts and attention, as well as through friendly behavior and by viewing all to be alike, one should worship me who abides in all creatures as their very self. So the Supreme Lord is here giving such a very, very simple way by which we can worship him as situated in the heart of living entity. Charitable gifts, attention, friendly behavior, and viewing all to be alike. Pandita Samadarshina, learned person sees all living entities as equal. This is transcendental vision, not that we see one person as great and one person as small. Everyone is equal according to their karma. Maybe put in different situations, all living entities are equal, whether they're in a American body, Indian body, man's body, woman's body, animal body, cat body, dog body. All living entities are equal, and we can worship all living entities by very, very simple acts of charitable gifts, attention, just extending ourselves in some way. Even just offering attention to someone is worshiping this super soul within the heart of another living entity. As a person walks by, we can honor that person, the Supreme Lord, within their heart simply by acknowledging their presence, at least mentally or actually physically, offering some respect to them. So this is a very simple method here of offering respects. And all these activities are acts of, in some way or another, extending ourselves. Acts of compassion. We're giving something, or we're at least giving our attention to someone. We're extending ourselves in some way to help another person. So there's a very beautiful verse that comes in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam when Lord Shiva drank the ocean of poison. Tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayasojana Param aradhanam tadhi purushasya akilatmani. This verse is stating that tapyante lokatapena, that the great souls, they're accepting suffering. Tapa means austerity, but also means suffering, or that which burns. So they're accepting some austerities, they're accepting sufferings, tapyante lokatapena. By their austerity, by their suffering, they are relieving the suffering of other living entities. Tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayasojana. The sadhus, they're always endeavoring in this way. Prayasojana. Param aradhanam tadhi. Param aradhanam. This is the supreme method of worshiping that person, tadhi purushasya akilatmani, who is the super soul within the heart of all living entities. So this is, we find many, many stories in Srimad Bhagavatam about these sadhus who accept great difficulties and suffering on behalf of other living entities. So I want to speak a little bit about the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The 7th canto, of course, this is a theme that runs throughout Srimad Bhagavatam in many places. We can find references to it. But the 7th canto is very specifically about this topic and goes into it in very great detail. And there's a lot of very wonderful things we can learn from the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is about friends and enemies. It begins by Maharaj Parikshit asking Sukadeva Goswami about the Supreme Personality of Godhead's behavior. It appears that he is partial. Being a learned person, Maharaj Parikshit understood that, yes, even an ordinary liberated soul, what to speak of a devotee or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, should not have friends or enemies. So how is it that it appears that the Supreme Lord is partial to the demigods? And to answer his question, Sukadeva Goswami narrates the dialogue between Maharaj Yudhisthira and Narada Muni that took place in the Rajasuya sacrifice assembly. So this Rajasuya sacrifice was going on, and Yudhisthira Maharaj, being such a great devotee of the Lord, he arranged this entire sacrifice just to glorify Krishna. Because at the beginning of the sacrifice, when all the kings of the entire world were assembled, there was the ceremony of worshiping the greatest personality in the assembly. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he wanted to worship Krishna, not just within his own heart, not just privately, but in front of everyone, declare to the entire world that yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in front of all the kings, Lord Krishna was unanimously selected as the most worshipful personality, and they began to worship him with various paraphernalia, bathe his feet. And this was intolerable to Shishupal. We all know the story. We don't have so much time to tell the whole story. But basically, Shishupal started blaspheming Krishna. And he came to his 100th blasphemy, and then Krishna chopped off his head. And then the spirit soul of Shishupal entered into the body of Krishna. So Maharaj Yudhisthira became very astonished that how is it this person has attained liberation? So then in this assembly, he asked Narada Muni this question, and then Narada Muni began to relate the story of who Shishupal really was, Jayan Vijay, and then we come to the story of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu. So this story is about, of course, it's about the Supreme Lord and his love and compassion and how he's never partial and he's equal to everyone. One thing which we can understand by this story is, what does it mean to be equal to everyone? We're talking here about friends and enemies, but we also hear over and over again that a devotee should be a well-wishing friend to everyone. These terms are used interchangeably throughout the scriptures. Well-wishing friend and friends and enemies. Avoiding friends and enemies or seeing everyone equally and being a well-wishing friend. So seeing everyone equally does not mean being a dead stone, like we're just neutral to everyone, indifferent. Now, seeing everyone equally means being equally compassionate to all living entities. So the Supreme Lord, he is equally compassionate to all living entities. So the basic principle, which is elaborated upon in this seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is that the bodily concept of life makes one very selfish, makes one very much addicted to sense gratification. In this state of consciousness, this kind of animalistic, self-centered consciousness, it is impossible for one to be truly compassionate. And that when one is freed from the bodily concept of life, then one can genuinely be a well-wishing friend, or one can genuinely be compassionate to all living entities. And without freedom from this bodily concept of life, one cannot be compassionate towards anyone. So, it is mentioned, so I'll just read a few paragraphs that I've written on a few different topics. So, in this idea of the root misconception of friends and enemies, partiality is based on bodily identification. The eternal spirit soul, part and parcel, servant of God, misidentifying with the material body and mind. This misidentification, known as false ego or ahankar, causes one to adopt a selfish, animalistic mentality that leads to trying to gratify one's senses at all costs. In this conception of life, where egoistic sense gratification is the goal, the illusion of friends and enemies arises. Those who help to gratify one's senses and further one's desires are considered to be friends, and those who stand in the way of one's selfish pursuits are considered to be enemies. So I want to talk a little bit about this conception, this idea of animal life versus human life. It's a little late, so we're just going to go very quickly, but I have a little... I did some research into this topic of children raised by animals. They're known as feral children, human children raised by animals. Feral means wild. So feral children are children raised by animals. There's a very famous case in here in India, actually, of two girls who were raised by wolves. And they were found by one person who was running an orphanage. And he named them Amala and Kamala. And you can see pictures. This is not like some story I'm making up or something. You can see pictures. He went into a wolf's... There was rumors that there were some ghosts living outside this village. So he went to investigate, and he saw these two like creatures were living in a wolf den. So at nighttime, when the wolves went out, he went inside and he captured them. And there were actually two young girls. One was about 2 years old, and one was about 8 years old. And he named them Amala and Kamala. You can see pictures of them. When they're sleeping, just laying on top of each other. If anyone's ever seen like dogs, the way they sleep just in like a big pile, so they keep warm that way. And it's very sad, actually, story. All these stories of wild children are very sad. They end up very tragically. But What is it that separates a human from an animal? At least in the English language, we have a word humane. So it's understood, even in secular society, that what separates a human from an animal is some sense of compassion or some empathy or awareness. Empathy means awareness of others' feelings. So this is really what, and the reason I mention these children is because people have studied these, there's been a number of cases and people have actually studied this phenomenon, written books. They've seen that, like these girls, for example, they were never ever really able to have a relationship with any other human being. They were never able to experience normal range of human emotions, any kind of awareness of other living entities, basically. They were just very much like animals. So what we find in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is really, one thing I've noticed about Srimad Bhagavatam is there's stories and then one character portrays a certain good quality to the maximum, and then there's another character who portrays the other character to the opposite of that characteristic to the maximum to illustrate this point. So in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj. They're basically the two main characters of the seventh canto. And Hiranyakashipu was throughout completely absorbed in friends and enemies. He's always talking about my enemies, where have you learned this from? My enemies are must be infiltrating, they're preaching to my son. And Prahlad Maharaj, he was always, this concept didn't even make sense to him. When his teachers asked him, where have you learned this from? Have you learned this from our enemies? He said, first of all, let me offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose illusory influence this misconception of friends and enemies has arisen. He said, previously I heard about this from my spiritual master, but now I'm actually seeing it in action. So we have this two characters, Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, he was so devoid of compassion. He was so much in the bodily concept of life, addicted to sense gratification. His very name means money and women, basically. He's just addicted to exploiting others. He had the whole universe trembling in fear. He was trying to make every living entity his servant and himself the only enjoyer. And he was such a cruel person. And the amazing thing is, at certain times in the story, he actually appears to be very, very compassionate. He calls his son Prahlad onto the throne. Oh, my dear Prahlad, please come here. What have you learned in school? Patting his head, smelling his head. So nice to see you. But immediately, as soon as Prahlad said something he did not like, my dear father, actually, you should go to the forest and worship Vishnu. His Hiranyakashipu's sworn enemy. Immediately, Hiranyakashipu became so angry. So we can see this conception of friends and enemies leading to sense gratification, leading to cruelty. Hiranyakashipu was willing to kill his own son within an instant because he was not satisfying his desires. As long as Prahlad Maharaj was satisfying his desires, siding with him, yes, Vishnu is bad, he must be destroyed, or playing into whatever and meeting his desires in some way, then he was very affectionate. But instantaneously, as soon as Prahlad did anything to displease him, immediately he was ready to kill him. So there's a number of instances in Bhagavatam. There's one very nice purport in the fourth canto in regards to Sati and Daksha. Prabhupada writes in the purport, Sati was the youngest child of Daksha, and she knew that she was his pet. But now, because of her association with Lord Shiva, Daksha forgot all his affection for his daughter, and this very much aggrieved her. the material bodily conception is so polluted that even upon slight provocation, all our relationships of love and affection are nullified. Bodily relationships are so transient that even though one is affectionate towards someone in a bodily relationship, a slight provocation terminates this intimacy. So we find in society there's a great crisis in relationships because relationships are so much based on selfishness. As Radhanath Maharaj often says, they're simply mutual agreements for sense gratification. You gratify my senses, and I'll gratify your senses. But the instant you no longer gratify my senses, I will be ready to kill you. I hate you, divorce you, beat you, whatever it may be. So we find this amongst friends, and this is why people are so frustrated and so unhappy in this material world, especially at this time now more than ever, because relationships are just so shallow, and they're desperately searching for something deeper, some relationship of where there's genuine love and compassion present. But because everyone is so much on the bodily concept of life, so much addicted to sense gratification, it becomes very impossible. Prabhupada would often speak of sense gratification as an addiction. So when you're addicted to something, you have no control over your activities. Probably most of you from India, for the majority, have not been in contact with people who are actually addicted to some very serious drug. But if you're actually addicted, whether, especially, there's a lot of what we call narcotics, heavy-duty drugs in the Western world, people become addicted, or even alcohol. They do anything to get that drug. One of my friends, his father was addicted to cocaine. And sometimes he would be not addicted and he would try and be a good father, but then he would slip back into it. So, you know, one day he bought his son a bike for his birthday, a nice, beautiful, expensive bike. But then a couple days later, he left home, he took the bike with him, he sold it to buy cocaine. So if we're addicted to something, we cannot truly be compassionate or selfless or loving because our addiction is prominent. So in the bodily conception of life, we cannot truly be compassionate because we're addicted to our own self-interest. We're habituated to it. We can't. So Krishna consciousness is this process of learning to develop compassion and love for all living entities. So ultimately we find throughout this whole incident, seventh canto, of course there's many, many details, and we could speak for many months just about the seventh canto and all of Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, but in essence, Hiranyakashipu, being extremely addicted to sense gratification, tried to kill his son Prahlad repeatedly. And Prahlad, despite all this, was never even for half a second anything but a loving, well-wishing friend to his father. And the only thing he had in his heart for his father was compassion. Through it all, we see that if someone does something to harm us, it's very difficult to feel compassion for that person. If they abuse us in some way, immediately we want to respond. So there's a couple lessons we can learn, but one thing we can learn is in any situation, we should try and cultivate compassion. And if we're able to maintain that compassion, we cannot feel any negativity towards anyone. So Prahlad Maharaj, when Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him, what was his consciousness? My dear Lord, this person is suffering so much under the bodily concept of life. His mind and senses are so uncontrolled. He's in constant anxiety. Sada samid vigna diyam asadgara. He's always embarrassed and suffering in material anxieties. Somehow give him your mercy. So if we can see how another person is suffering, even if they're mistreating us, then we can be compassionate to them. So this requires, but generally we're very much self-absorbed. I'm suffering, he did this to me, I went through this and that and that. We're not able to see how actually another person is suffering. But if we see what someone else is going through, then we cannot hate that person. The only actually appropriate response is compassion. Because you see, this person is suffering. How can there be any other response? This person is suffering so much, he may be trying to hurt me, but actually he's suffering. So this was Prahlad Maharaj's consciousness, and we see at the end, very beautifully, Lord Nrisimhadev was begging Prahlad to accept some benediction. And Prahlad very beautifully was praying to the Lord, I've not come to you as a merchant. I don't want anything in return. Why are you trying to insult me in this way? I just want to serve you. I'm not a merchant. But Lord Nrisimhadev was insisting, no, you must accept something. And Prahlad, he said, okay, if you must grant something, then just grant my father liberation. What a beautiful consciousness. And then ultimately, Prahlad Maharaj's, the full extent of his consciousness is revealed later in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev. Naivodvijay para duratya vaitaranyas tadvirya gayana maham mrita magnajita so cheta to vimukha cheta sa injiyata maya sukaya bara udvahatan vimudhan. My dear Lord, I am not at all afraid of material existence, but simply I am lamenting for those who are absorbed in this illusory happiness. I'm simply lamenting with compassion for them. I'm not at all interested in going to the caves and forests for my own liberation. I want to stay here in this material world and suffer on behalf of the conditioned souls. As long as there are foolish conditioned souls, living entities suffering in this material world, I want to remain here on their behalf to try and reconnect them to you somehow. So this is the attitude of the pure devotees of the Lord. We can see this attitude in all the pure devotees of the Lord. In all traditions, they come out of compassion and they accept suffering, tapyante lokatapena. By their own suffering, they relieve the suffering of other living entities. In this way, they are perfectly worshiping the Supreme Lord within the heart. And until we come to this platform of worshiping the Supreme Lord within the heart of all living entities, there's no question of worshiping the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world, in this personal aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. First, we must come to the platform of Brahman realization. Then we can begin to perform devotional service. And then Paramatma realization, then Bhagavan realization. There's no question of jumping. Pure devotional service is performed from the liberated platform of offering all respects to all living entities and worshiping the Supreme Lord situated in the heart of all living entities. So that's just something I rambled on for probably too long now. I don't know if we have time for any questions or comments. 5 minutes are there. Okay. Krishna Nam Prabhu.
Thank you for your nice class, Prabhu. The small doubt in my mind, in this text number 28, the translation reads, O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. And what to speak of a son who is a brahmachari? Now, this is being told by the demigods, so just wondering how, I thought most of them were grahasthas. The demigods. So who is actually saying this?
The demigod. Hare Krishna. Is the doubt that you're worried your son will become a brahmachari? Okay. No. This is the demigods are speaking to Tvastha. They're saying that you should be obedient and accept us as your guru because we're asking you to, and you're a brahmachari. And we're like your parents. We're on the level of your parents, so you should obey us. Even though you may not want to act as our guru because we're older to you, you should still do it because we're asking you to do it. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna.
In the class, you said that Prahlad Maharaj begged Narsingadev to grant liberation to his father. So, if Prahlad Maharaj is in pure devotional service, and maybe in the, so why is not begging Narsingadev to grant pure service to Hiranyakashipu? Because he understands that liberation is insignificant for a living entity, because he is in that prema stage. So he can also ask to Narsingadev, yes, why do you give liberation to my father? Because you should give service, pure service to my father. So why doesn't he ask such questions?
For a devotee, liberation means devotional service. There's no devotee does not even think of pure devotee if he says liberation. He does not think impersonal liberation is liberation. He thinks impersonal liberation is hellish, in a prison. So we can understand that he means devotional service. When devotees use the term liberation in context, then we can understand they mean devotional service. Anything else? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.